This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
We're going to start with a nice word on Parsha's history. The pusik at the end of the Parsha says, "V'lesal v'malos al mizbechi." The Urich L'chaim explains that when a person is davening to Hashem, you have to know how to ask Hashem a tefillah and a bakusha. If somebody asks for something, whether it's rochnius or gashmius, whatever he's being mispalel for, and he asks it in a way that makes it sound like, Hashem, I deserve this, that's the reason why his tefillah might not be answered. Because then Hashem starts looking to see if the person really deserves it. Hashem, you should give me this. I deserve it. I put in so much work and I do so many good things. And Hashem starts actually looking into a person's cheshbon. Does he deserve it or not? And that obviously is not a great thing. When a person asks Hashem for a matnas chinam, please Hashem, give me the chachma, give me the money, give me the health, whatever I need. That's a lot easier way to have your tefillahs answered. So Reich L'chaim explains, when a person is coming to the mezbayach, which is Maramazan Avoida, and he's asking Hashem, he's davening, he shouldn't be sala b'malas. He shouldn't come as if he has a mala, he has a madraiga that makes him deserve it. Because then sometimes it will become clear that you actually don't deserve it, and Hashem will start looking into your cheshbon and seeing, you know, if he has to give it to you. So it's a lot easier, he says, when a person asks for a matnas chinam. And I don't want to be megashim this word, but it's talking about your relationship with Hashem. But I think that when it comes to any relationship, it's such a good lesson, because so often people are busy trying to convince each other or explain to each other why they deserve something, why they should be treated a certain way or given a certain thing. And then it turns into an argument. Why should I give it to you? You don't deserve it. You do deserve it. You don't do it for me, etc. And sometimes when you just ask nicely, could you please do this for me? It just makes it so much easier. So let me read a question and try to address it. Hi, thank you for all your advice and insight on marriage, relationship, and chinuch. I have a question I'd like clarity on. My husband, who is a great father and husband, whom I respect tremendously, does not test my boys on what they bring home from Cheder on Shabbos or Motzei Shabbos. Also, most times, like Uvos Ebunim, times that parents learn with their children, he skips for one reason or another. Although I try not to say anything, and I'm mostly successful to stay quiet about it, it does create a tension within me, especially on Sunday when I don't have what to fill in on their papers that are being sent back to Cheder. Although sometimes I want to pick up the papers my boys brought home myself and start reviewing it with them, I don't feel comfortable doing it, as it's not my role, I think. Also, it's not shy to do with the older boys who are not learning basic parsha anymore, but Gemara and other things that I'm not acquainted with. What is my role here? And the bigger question for me is, how do I let go and not get upset about it and still feel like I'm doing my part as a parent to instill in them a chshivas ha-Torah? Thank you for taking time to read my question and looking forward for an answer. Okay, very good question. Relatively common question, by the way. So I've heard this many times. There are very many different ways people look at these things. There are fathers that are very into learning with the kids and fehering the kids and testing them, make sure they know it. And there are fathers that are much less into that, let's call it. There are mothers that care much more. There are mothers that care much less. And then you start doing the math. How sometimes, just the laws of probability, how many times will a father who cares very much of it marry a mother who cares very much of it and something about it, and the other way around? So very often it comes out that a father has different opinions or feelings about how much to review and test his children, and the mother then has her feelings, and very often it clashes like this. So I think I just want to start with addressing the idea of learning with boys at home. I think, like with almost anything else, extreme attitudes sometimes get a little confusing and misleading. There are those that feel that it's extremely crucial to review with the boys whatever they learned and to make sure they know it 100%, and that it's the father's responsibility to go over everything and make sure that they go back to Cheder knowing everything, and etc. And obviously this causes a lot of tension, either with the boys or with the father himself, who's feeling this huge obligation, or just being obsessed, or whatever it is. You know, sometimes it's just a little overdone, not a question. Then you have those who feel that it's completely unnecessary, and whatever they learn in Cheder and they know is good, and whatever they don't know is not so important, it's not my job. So obviously, we always have to find the balance, like in everything. I think I repeated this in the past. There was once something going on, and there were people saying that it's a big mitzvah to join and be part of this, and then some people were saying that you're not allowed to be part of it, like a lot of these kind of arguments. And I remember hearing a Kli Ga'id Yeah, a smart person, he tells me, you want to know what I think about this? I think that it's not the big mitzvah that people are making out of it, and it's also not a big avaira that other people are making out of it. It's somewhere in between. There are people that think it's the right thing to do, and by all means they should be doing it, without telling everyone else that they have to do it. And then there are people who think that it's not a good thing to do, and they don't have to do it, without telling everyone else that they're not allowed to do it. You know, so somewhere in the middle, and I think that's such a lesson in life when it comes to a lot of different things. You know, learning with boys when they come home from Chayder, it's somewhere in the middle. And yes, there's obviously a lot of good that comes out of it, and then there are other parts that we have to make sure that are taka being done the right way, in a healthy way, in a balanced way, where children aren't feeling overburdened by it, and parents aren't feeling overburdened by having to do it, etc. In general, there is a homework issue debate, let's call it. I know Matisui Salomon, the Mashgiach of Lakewood, who was just recently nifter. I remember reading from him some Chinuch article about he felt that there was no reason to give homework at all. Whatever you learn in Chayda, that's what you learn. You come home, you go play. Now, he did think that it was important for parents to learn with their children, by the way. He mentioned that a father can learn with his son, Sefer HaChinuch, or other nice things, connect over Torah, and be mechanech that way, and have a good connection about Torah. But to bring home what the child's already learned for 7 hours, and have to now do more of it at home, he felt that it was unnecessary. Now, who am I to give an opinion, you know, between the big mechanech and Gedolei Yisrael, who some felt that way and some felt the other way? My point is just that it's not necessarily extremely important for everyone to agree that all children need to be tested and reviewed with a father every week. And I'm just, you know, there's different opinions and feelings about it, and it seems that the husband over here, the father over here, has his opinion about it, unless it's not an opinion, he's just a little lazy. But you know, there are different ways of dealing with this, and very often the mother has her opinion and perspective and feeling about it, and it makes her very nervous. Why is my husband not doing what's right? And I'm just trying to point out that there might not necessarily be just one right and wrong. To mention that this is, you know, a way of teaching chashivas ha-Torah, and what do I do if my husband's not learning with them? How am I going to make sure that they have a chashivas for learning? Again, I don't think this is the only way to teach chashivas ha-Torah at all. As a matter of fact, again, I don't want to sound like I'm bending the other way at all, but as a matter of fact, sometimes the children that have to learn with their father and get tested on what they learned and have to know it, and it just causes some trauma about limud ha-Torah, for that matter. And not necessarily is it the way to make sure that children like to learn. Well, I'll get back to that in Mitzvah. It is clear, however, that for some fathers, even those who do want to learn with the children, and this is what I meant when I was mentioning the trauma, we'll get back to the Chashivas HaTorah part, but it's clear that for some fathers, even those who do want to learn with the children, it's not the right thing to do. For some, it's just not the right thing to do. I remember hearing a big mechanech, a big Rosh Hashiva, talking about this at a chinuch event. And he's saying that sometimes for a father to learn with his son is just not good for either of them. The father gets nervous when he sees the son doesn't know it. The son gets nervous when his father is getting impatient with him. And sometimes it's just not the right thing. And this is a general thing in chinuch where it's important for some fathers to realize that in certain areas they might not be the right connection. Just recently also I was talking actually to another mashgiach in the yeshiva who was saying that in a lot of different areas he sees how fathers, especially with older bukhrim, as they get older, there's a certain disconnect where the father and the son aren't understanding each other and not relating to each other the right way and just getting nervous from each other, and that's when it's time to say, okay, I did mine. I'll have to now allow the people who I'm trusting my son's chinuch with, whether it's a mashgiach, a magachir, a shiva, let them step in and do more of this because it's not working. And it's just important to realize that sometimes you're just not the right person for it. I remember hearing from a malamed, actually, who was the way he felt was best for his son to learn by Uvas Abunim was actually to switch with another Ingeman. He had a friend. They both had sons. I don't know if the reason was because they both were learning the other limud in cheder or whatever it was, but they felt that for the benefit of the children, it would be best if this guy learns with that one son and that one learns with this one son, and everyone was happy. So I'm just giving food for thought where sometimes, even when a father does want to learn with his son, he might not be the right fit or match, or it might not be the best option for him. And maybe that's actually why this father is resisting a little bit. I don't know. There's also another point, which also we spoke about in the past, where there's different styles of how to do this. You have a father who does a basic faher and just makes sure that the son knows something. You have a father who doesn't even care what the son knows, he just wants to make sure that he knows he has to sit down and review something. Then you have those that grill the kid to the end. And a lot of times when it comes to these styles, that alone can become a major issue where the mother doesn't like what the father's doing. Why is he grilling my son? Why is he forcing him to learn? He should be lighter, he should be hotter, he should be more thorough, less thorough. So this is all just things to take into account and realize that everyone has their way of doing it or not doing it. And so important. I remember hearing from somebody who said that he used to learn with his son at home until this became a major thing where the mother was listening in and giving comments about how it should be done. Comments to the boy, comments to the father. And that was it. He couldn't do it anymore. He just went to shul and did it over there because learning at home wasn't working, because the way her father did it or the way that she felt was right to do it wasn't what this father was comfortable doing. So all this is just the idea of learning at home and learning with boys and knowing how to balance all the different parts of it to make sure that it's being done right for the father's taste and the boy's taste and the mother's taste and all that. When a father is unavailable, for whatever reason, and again, if this is not a shalom bias issue, but sometimes when a father is not available, it's fine to have somebody else learn with him, or fine to have him learn on his own, or just review something. It's not always just one answer where I wish my husband would do it this way and it's not happening, so I'm stuck. There's a lot of creativity and a lot of different options which could be taken into consideration. So even if it is, and when it is important that a child review what he learned in Chayder, there's more ways to do it. So for whatever reason, it's not working for him, for whatever reason, to learn with his father, it might not necessarily mean that he shouldn't be reviewing at all, or he can't be tested, etc. Okay. Now, I think what some people who listen to me often might be expecting me to discuss over here is something I mention often, how Shalom Bayis and Chinuch should never start becoming overlapping and causing problems one of another. It's such a typical example of where a Chinuch issue could become a Shalom Bayis issue. It sounds like you're talking about a great husband and father, okay? And you have an issue with a child's faher. Now, it could be that it's an issue. And it could be a child doesn't need the faher. And it could be that he doesn't have the chshivas atoyer without it even. But for this to become an issue of resentment and tension and disturb your relationship, it's just something to always just be aware of and work on and make sure that it's not turning into that. There's a story about the Pinchas al-Karatza. And Imre Pinchas, he brings it, that his wife used to spend a lot of money. The Rebbe would spend a lot of money. And he would often either say to her or to himself, Seretz HaKroin, I guess that was her name, I think, Seretz HaKroin, you're spending all the money that we have, and we're not going to be left with anything, but the Gemara says that Machloikas Achas Doichem Maya Panusis, that one fight, one argument, pushes away 100 sources of Panusis. So if I'm going to fight with you about it, we're going to have even less. And that was like his way of basically calming himself down about it, it seems. And it's a big lesson. It's a big lesson. Sometimes it's just not worth it. It's not worth fighting over the $100 if the fight is going to cost more than $100. So the comical way of saying it is that it's not worth going for therapy for $250 over a $50 argument. But in this case, you have to always just weigh everything and make sure that it makes sense. So to be upset at your husband and have this tension built up and turn the Sunday paper into an issue when it's just not worth it. It's not worth it. Now, it doesn't mean that it doesn't bother you, but it's not worth it. It means that you make the cheshbon. Is this worth me getting stuck on? Is the fact that my husband doesn't learn with the boys and doesn't review with them, and is it worth it? Especially when it comes to the chinuch itself, and shalom bayis is such a big part of chinuch. So when you're just weighing the pros and cons in the chinuch alone, it's not just the chinuch versus the shalom bayis. For your children to have the right chinuch and the right cheshivas atoyra and to grow up to be the healthiest people they could be, they need to see a mommy respecting a tati and all that. And I'm not saying that there's any reason for me to assume that it's not that way. I've seen this become an issue where people are adding a chinuch problem to a small problem in the name of chinuch and not realizing that a lack of shalom bayis is not chinuch. So if a mother is screaming at her husband, for example, which doesn't sound like this lady's doing at all, why don't you learn with the boys? You never learn with them. You don't have time for them. You think you're helping their chinuch by making sure your husband does that, but in the meantime, you're just rocking the boat. So that's just something to think about. Now, what do you do with the technical part? Yeah, sometimes you just stay quiet about it and don't say anything. Sometimes you wait for your son to mention something to his father that he wants to learn with him. Sometimes you don't have to sign the paper Sunday, and when your son asks, well, where's my paper? You say, I don't know. You could ask Tati to sign it without making it into anything that looks like an issue. Or just signing the papers and making believe he did review it. You know, there's different things you could do to avoid whatever tension, discomfort, the technical part of it brings about. But the next thing, which I think is the most important, I think, is the point about communication. You don't mention, again, I'm only working with a letter and nothing personal, I'm just trying to help share ideas. You don't mention even once that you asked your husband to learn with your boys. Now, it could be you did, but you don't mention it. And very often, this is actually what happens. People are watching from the side, something happened, they don't like it, they're getting angry about it, they're building tension about it, and they never yet spoke about it. And by the time they do, it's said the wrong way. So you mentioned over here that you're mostly successful to stay quiet about it. I'm not sure why you're staying quiet about this. So I think, since, like I said, you may have asked many times, it didn't work, and that's why you decided to stay quiet about it. I don't know. But I've mentioned in the past a book that a friend of mine wrote. I think it's called Me and You Equals We. A good book. Not so popular, but very good book. And one of the ideas he talks about over there is the downside of being mevater. To a point where he says that being mevater is the biggest problem in Shalom Bayis. Imagine that. Who would believe? When somebody's mevater, that's a wonderful thing, right? But sometimes you're mevater and it's causing resentment. You're getting angry over time. It plots out somewhere in the wrong way. And then you assume that because you were mevater, somebody else will have to be mevater, and they're not being mevater, and just makes a lot of problems. Why being mevater? So I think there's a typical example of knowing how to communicate about this thing that's bothering you. And it starts with asking nicely. It starts with asking nicely. Could you please learn with the boys now? I think it's just so simple. And I think where people tend to make the biggest mistake is when they turn it into an argument or a debate, and they start explaining the importance, and then it gets frustrating. Either because your husband is taking it personally that you think that he's wrong, and he has to stick up for himself and say why he's right, or because some people don't know how to be vulnerable and ask for a favor, so you're not doing this for me, you're doing this for him, right? This is what he needs. Well, he doesn't need it. I think he does need it. Well, you could think. There's no reason for that. Sometimes just being straightforward and saying, Yanki, would you mind just sitting down with the boys for a half hour and learning them? It makes it easier for me to just fill out the papers later, or even without explaining why. Sometimes that would just do it. It's like it's an old mistake to not know how to ask for something or to discuss it. It's called discussing it and then turning it into an argument about who's right and wrong. Now, I know some people are so passionate about their opinion that they are either sure that the other person will take it right, or they feel that it's very important to convince the other person, but there's no reason for it. And sometimes just asking nicely will get you a lot further. Sometimes asking nicely doesn't work. And then you have to learn new tools and tips in communication to know how to make someone understand that something's important to you. But it starts with the simple asking, which some people just don't do that. They didn't think of that. Somebody was just telling me recently that his wife... I just always careful before I give an example, but the point was that his wife asked him for something in a very twisted way, and it was a very professional way. It was a very eloquent way of asking. This thing helps me a lot, and it would mean a lot to me if it's not a problem with you. And it was like a whole complicated way of expressing that she wants something done. Now he said, if I'd be a difficult person, and when she asks me to do it, I turn her down or I ignore her request. And she had to come up with a nice way of saying it so that I can't ignore her, but I don't feel challenged, and I don't feel forced and whatever. There are people that you have to talk like that to. And it's true. And I often teach people how to talk like that, because when you say, can you please come home early? The answer is, I'll see. So instead, you say, it will mean so much to me if you come home early. It will make life much easier for me. And if there's anything I could do to help you do that, I'll be happy to, but you really don't have to. There are people that you have to talk to in a little twisted, complicated way to make sure your message is coming across and they won't ignore it. But sometimes it's not necessary. And when it's not necessary, it could actually be hurtful when you talk to someone that way. So this young man was bothered by the fact that his wife was talking to him in a way that made it sound almost like he was a difficult person who was just saying, could you please do this? And he would say no. Now, it could be the reason why she decided to talk that way. It wasn't because she felt he was difficult. Rather, it was because it's easier for her to express herself that way and feeling less vulnerable. And I understand it. And not necessarily could you change that. But the right way to do it is, could you please? Thank you. If people could feel more comfortable saying, could you please, and thanking, that would be much, much better. And when it comes to this, sometimes you don't want to do it. I'm going to ask you to please learn with our child as if you're doing me a favor. What's the problem? Well, you're not doing me a favor, so I'm not doing you a favor. But just say it that way, and we'll all feel good. I'll feel good that I think I'm doing you a favor. You'll feel good that what you wanted should happen will happen. And you'll thank me, and I'll feel even better. I'll probably do it next week on my own, and we're good. And that's really, I think, the best way to try and start communicating about this issue. Could you please learn with them? You can do it when it works for you, obviously. You're not pushing anyone to do anything specific. But I think it's fine to ask and to figure out a way to communicate nicely about it instead of just bottling up the tension and the resentment and everything else. And this is just one example where I think people could apply this to any other example. I just want to go back to the thing that you mentioned at the end about the Chshivas HaTorah. You know, if my husband doesn't know my sons, who's going to teach him the Chshivas of learning Torah? Now, I don't think you meant to manipulate the question with that at all, but people do it, and that's why I just want to mention this. sometimes people will add a certain claim, like, you know, I understand that my husband doesn't want to daven with the kids, or doesn't go to daven at all, or whatever, different things that I hear, unfortunately, from people. But what's going to be with the chinuch? Now, you don't have to hide behind the chinuch if something's bothering you. That's just one idea. You want something to happen, you're entitled to ask for it. You're not controlling anyone yet, and you're not screaming at anyone. You're asking someone to do something. So this is what people think, like, yeah, but it's his decision. It could be his decision, and you still got to ask for it. You don't have to hide behind something. And sometimes it's like a lack of confidence when you tell someone to do something and you start explaining why you want it done. You don't have to give reasons. You're allowed to want something done. It makes you feel good. You appreciate it. You believe in it. Or whatever else. If you're asking how to teach a chshivas to learning Torah, I wouldn't say, I don't think, that if you would ask me in general, how do we teach our children chshivas to learning Torah, I would say, oh, make sure your husband learns with them every month of Shabbos. I never connected those dots, I'll be honest with you. I look at that more like a homework thing where kids just want to get over it or get the prize that they get for learning over Sabunim or whatever it is. There's a lot of ways to teach chashivas and learning Torah. One is by example, obviously, if the husband's learning, sitting and learning and appreciating that. And then mommy's talking about it with the recheres and chashivas. We can't disturb Tati, he's learning, he's doing the most important thing. You make a nice siyum, a nice seder, you're machshav limud haTorah. You give good things for children who learn. You know, if you have a day off and you're going to learn on your own, you get something for it because it's a wonderful thing. There's a lot of ways to teach chshivas haTorah, and not necessarily is it, you know, by pushing a specific agenda that you think is important. And it might be important, but that's usually not what it is. I'll end off by saying that just like with a lot of other situations, very often people want a certain thing done, and there are ways to get it done. And they start focusing on, how do I get this done? And if I can't get it done, I'll be unhappy. And like this writer is saying, very nicely, if I can't get it done, and how do I make myself happy anyway? But sometimes that just happens when you get stuck on a specific solution. Especially because there are ways to get almost everything done, and that's why people get stuck. I think this is the solution. Now the question is, how do I get it done? And if I can't get it done, how do I surrender without being depressed or angry about it? Very often, if you're just a little more creative, you could come up with more ways to do things. I think when people get too stuck on the specific, I want my husband to hire the boys. I want him to hire the boys every week. I want him to go to Ufa Zabunim. That's when you start getting a little edgy and unhappy if you can't get it done specifically. But sometimes getting the boys to learn, or getting your husband to feel good about the learning with them, or letting him do it his way, or having someone else learn with them, or having you learn with them, when you get a little more creative and brainstorming, I think it's often much easier, you know, to be happy and to have everyone else be happy and to get the things that are important to you. Whether it's your children to be learning and to be fahering and whatever else. So just to recap, learning with boys is a wonderful thing and it should be done with a healthy balance. You know, however it works for you and for your children and for your spouse. Chinuch and Shalom Bayis should always, you know, both be taken very seriously and make sure that one's not causing a problem for the other. Communication about anything is extremely important, finding the ways to do it in the healthiest, most non-threatening manner. And Chshivas HaTorah is something we always want to instill in our children, 100%, not a question. Like we started off with, V'lesalav malas al mizbechi. Very often you want your husband or wife to do something, and part of the way you express it, part of the way you're thinking about it is, this is what has to be done, either because I deserve it or because it's the right thing, it's a given. And that's where it turns into a debate and an argument. And it's so much easier sometimes when you just like when we're davening to Hashem, say, Hashem, please do this for me. Not because I deserve it or it's right, but please do it. And you get your tefillahs answered quicker. I think that very often you'll have the things that are important to you happen faster at home when you just ask nicely and politely and you're thankful about it. And Eibush Hashulf, you know, with the right communication, the right understanding one of another, we can live together.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.